Daisy had taken the sausages up, but had not been sufficiently conscientious as a waitress to return for the empties. At Daisy's school there was a little percussion band. She had herself on occasion been allowed to strike a cymbal or shake a tambourine. The knife and fork suggested to her wholly acceptable percussion instruments. She had picked them up and hesitantly tapped them on the skins of the larger drums. An encouraging, if subdued, sound had resulted. Delighted, she had gradually increased the strength of her beat, and the drumming produced, although in no way to be compared with that achieved by the use of authentic drumsticks, was nonetheless gratifying. Unfortunately, Daisy had a very low boredom threshold. If she had simply continued to keep up a subdued tattoo with her knife and fork until William's return, little or no damage would have been done. But the monotony of this exercise began to pall quite quickly. In an attempt to increase the volume of noise produced by the drums, she had stuck the knife and the fork, simultaneously, into the drum skins, as if tackling a steak and kidney pie. The result of this action, predictable as it would have been to an adult, had horrified Daisy only marginally less than William, who had at that moment returned, bearing his ill-gotten bacon and eggs. Fact the fifth. William, his eye falling straightaway on the shocked Daisy, knife and fork in hand, and his shattered drums, had blown his mind. "Something snapped in me," he claimed. "It would have snapped in anybody." "He smacked me!" cried Daisy. "He smacked me hard on my bottom!"
"Hallelujah!" yelled Mr. Bagthorpe. "It's a breakthrough!"
"You beast!" squealed Rosie, and began to pummel William hard with her fists. There was every sign that the furor would break out afresh when Mrs. Bagthorpe, in ringing tones, commanded, "Stop!" They were so surprised that they stopped. Mrs. Bagthorpe never raised her voice. She did not believe in it, and did deep breathing if she ever got tempted. Now her yoga had let her down. "Is this true, William?" she demanded.
"Yes, it is," he said, "and if anybody'd ever smacked her before, my drums wouldn't have been shattered."
"She needs smacking regularly," Mr. Bagthorpe said delightedly, "to make up for lost time. We can only hope, William, that you have set a precedent."
Daisy, at four, had never been smacked in her life. She had never even been shouted at, except by the Bagthorpes. All she had ever been was chided. Aunt Celia believed in letting Daisy have her way in all things, thinking thereby to encourage her freedom of expression. The walls of the Knoll, for instance, were thick with Daisy's crayon thoughts and mottoes, and there were several little burned-out corners where Daisy had lit fires during her pyromaniac phase.
"You had no business to smack Daisy, William," Mrs. Bagthorpe said. "I am ashamed of you."
"Violence breeds violence," Grandma proclaimed. "Daisy is a shining, innocent jewel of a child, and no finger should ever be raised against her."
"Coming from you, Mother," said Mr. Bagthorpe, "that is rich. When I was Daisy's age, you raised not only fingers against me, as I remember, but also walking sticks and umbrellas. You are a whited sepulchre."
"You were never innocent," Grandma told him, unabashed. "I would frequently despair of ever raising you as a recognizable human being at all. I am even now uncertain whether I succeeded."
"But it's not fair!" Daisy now put her oar in again. "William smacked me, and it wasn't me. It was Arioch!"
"Oh, my God!" exclaimed Mr. Bagthorpe. William, hollow-eyed and pale from shock and lack of sleep, looked as if again something was going to snap.
"Of course it was Arioch," said Grandma calmly. "I have never liked him, as you know, but I think I recognize his handiwork when I see it. Daisy is innocent."
"And black," gritted Mr. Bagthorpe, "is white. Arioch is a member of Daisy's household, and Russell will foot the bill for those drums nonetheless.
And William will answer to him for striking an innocent and defenseless child," replied Grandma. "Come, Daisy, we must set about being immortal."
"I don't think I feel like living forever today," said Daisy dolefully.
"Nonsense," Grandma said briskly. "You are too sensitive, Daisy. You must learn not to let trivial matters upset you.
Let us go and execute the first stage in our plan."
"God help us all," muttered Mr. Bagthorpe quite seriously, as the pair left the room.
In the doorway they passed Tess, who had been unable to sleep for the noise of drumming, and had been copying Voltaire until 2 a.m. She, too, had black rings round her eyes and looked extremely ill-tempered.
Another row set up immediately, and only Jack appeared to notice that Daisy and Grandma were making extensive use of the telephone in the hall. By his reckoning, they made 8 or 9 calls. While recriminations were still flying, Mrs. Fosdyke's key rattled noisily in the lock. Instant silence fell. The Bagthorpes had recently experienced the disruption in their lives occasioned by Mrs. Fosdyke's absence, and had no wish to do so again. The row would have to be held in abeyance. They all sat and glared as Mrs. Fosdyke scooted across the kitchen, whipping off her chiffon headscarf as she did so. She went to take a look at her uncompleted portrait.
"Coming on all right, I suppose," she remarked. "That frame will make all the difference."
The Bagthorpes were in no mood for fawning upon Mrs. Fosdyke, but had to make the attempt.
"I think it's jolly good," Jack offered. "I think it's going to be the best Rosie's ever done."
"She has, of course, an excellent subject," said Mrs. Bagthorpe, managing a smile of sorts.
"You stop that drumming, I see,"
observed Mrs. Fosdyke, setting up a rattle that was far louder than William's tattoo had ever been, even at close range.
"Well, thank the Lord for that. I try to stand things, but there's a limit. Got tired out, did he?"
"I was forced to give up, because of a technical hitch," William told her with dignity. "Otherwise I should have lasted for days, even weeks."
"There's many as it have give their notice years ago, of course. It's a marvel what I do put up with. Someone been frying again, has there?"
"Vitamings is what I thought you wanted at breakfast, Mrs. Bagthorpe. There's plenty of 'em in grapefruit, and a great bowl of 'em here waiting to be ate. There's no vitamings in bacon and egg that I do know. Oranges and grape—"
"I am off to do some work," Mr. Bagthorpe announced. He could not stand Mrs. Fosdyke at the best of times, and certainly could not sit and listen to her if she was going to start soliloquizing about vitamings.
"And I'm off to start a new scheme," William said, following his father.
"What will that be, dear?" his mother asked timorously.
"I would rather not say, if you don't mind," William told her. "Some people are evidently not above sabotage, and it's safer."
"Try to work in your rooms as much as possible today," Mrs. Bagthorpe told everybody. "The decorators will be here, remember, and we want things to go as smoothly as possible."
The Bagthorpes scattered, and the smooth day began.